But I want to get to college baseball because we are down to the regionals now. And co-host of By the Books, along with Captain America Dave Ross, Jensen Lewis, kind enough to join us to break it all down. Jensen, where are you headed this weekend for all of this?
Great to be with you, boys. Headed to the old country roads to take me home to Morgantown. So about a 3-hour drive from where I'm at in Northeast Ohio. Gil Kelly, I can tell you, when you watch it on TV, and fortunately Tom Hart and I will have the first game on ESPN2 at noon Eastern between Wake Forest and Kentucky on Friday afternoon, the place is going to be insane. We have a couple of host sites that are going to be absolutely ridiculous atmospheres. And very excited to see the Morgantown faithful when they get their team, the Mountaineers, playing at 5 p.m. Eastern time that day as well.
I want to do this bracket by bracket. The way that we have the graphics set up, it's not necessarily in terms of like, which bracket then ends up against which bracket in the super regionals. We'll do these alphabetically, guys. You can go to the first graphic there. Let's start with the Atlanta region, or Athens, actually, if we're doing alphabetically, Athens region, where Georgia, of course, rules the roost here. I assume you expect the Bulldogs to advance out of this?
It would be a shock for me to see them not do that. Ironically, I did have the Athens regional last year, and it was a massive shocker. They were the 7 seed last year, and Gil, one of the great home run hitting teams in college baseball the last decade. They're right back to it. They won the regular season SEC title as well as the conference title. And when you look at where they are just stacked up against Liberty, BC, and LIU, it would be a shock for them not to get through. I do agree for them to be over $3.5 favorite. Wes Johnson's group about as formidable offensively, and they have one of the player of the year candidates, a slugging catcher and left-hander, Daniel Jackson. Their tape measure homers, Gil. This is a team that could join the 2024 Tennessee Vols, my 2019 Vanderbilt Commodores, and the 2009 LSU Tigers to win not only the regular season SEC title, the tournament title, but also the Men's College World Series title if they're able to get to that final and hoist the trophy at the end of the road.
Atlanta, I'm going to assume Georgia Tech for you as well. Big favorite, -750 favorite to come out of that.
How about this offense? And again, this is how old I am, or I guess how old we are. Danny Hall retired last year. His young protege, James Ramsey, takes over his first season as head coach. And all they do is go out and just beat the absolute crap out of every opposing pitching staff. They lead Division I in batting average at .358, on base percentage at .469. They're slugging over .630. Gil, they're averaging almost 11 runs a game. I just had the Citadel in the SoCon Conference Tournament Final against Mercer over the weekend. They have been absolutely pulverizing the baseball. So if you're going to get a little upset of the apple cart, maybe the Citadel can take out Oklahoma in that first game between the 2 and the 3 seed. But I have no qualms seeing the Yellow Jackets basically slug their way out of this regional and be home there for a super regional in Atlanta as well.
Yeah. Remember, folks, again, what Jensen is referring to, these are the regionals. There's 8 of them. Winners will then face each other in the super regionals in a best of 3. But that's where that, if we ever show our College World Series bracket, that Fakakta bracket,
yep,
it starts with the super regionals. So it's all very sort of confusing. Let's go to the Auburn bracket here, the Auburn regional. Where are the Tigers? No surprise here, -290. Any upset potential here?
This is an intriguing one because if you look at where they are offensively, they're not the best offense in this regional. You could look to UCF and NC State, obviously out of the Big 12 and the ACC respectively. But this is one of the top pitching teams in the country, Gil. 16 wins against ranked opponents this year. That's tied with Georgia for the most in Division I. They are averaging about 6.5 runs per game against those ranked opponents, but it has been a trio of arms on their weekend rotation. They can absolutely run suppress with the best of them. If you're looking for a little an upstart, you might want to take a little nibble at UCF. On the selection show on Monday, they were all in the pool, tarps off in their own right when they saw their name called there. So I don't anticipate it. I would think Auburn holds serve. And again, would be in line to host the Super Regional there on the Plains.
All right, Texas, like Georgia Tech in Atlanta, Texas, a similar -750 favorite to come out of the Austin Regional.
10th time the Longhorns, I believe, have been a top eight seed here, Gil. They were eliminated. You talk about an upset. Last year in the Austin Regional, it was UTSA who knocked them out as a two seed. That's the first time since 2007 when I made my Major League debut that they lost a home regional. They had won six straight home regionals up to that point. They're one of the top 20 pitching staffs in the country at a 4.22 ERA, sixth in WHIP at a .122, and they've been pretty formidable at home, 29-4, their home record this year. Gil, I'll highlight this because I think people need to realize in the betting terms, when you're a regional host, since 1999, it's been about a 66% conversion rate to not only get to super regionals, but those super regional hosts have gotten to Omaha at a 70% clip. So that's why you look at not only the top 16, but particularly the top eight seeds. It's an automatic home field advantage if you win your regional into a super. Over two-thirds, almost three-quarters of the time, you're seeing those hosts advance not only to the supers, but also to Omaha.
All right, these four regionals, Jensen, perhaps more interesting because let's start in Chapel Hill. North Carolina did not get a top four seed, right? Which was a bit of a surprise to some. Is Tennessee live in this region?
North Carolina got a five. So they are the number five national team, but you're right, Gil, of the top eight, the committee did them no favors whatsoever with the road that they've got to go through. Tennessee, obviously we know a very battle-tested group. They've actually played a lot better here down the stretch. And East Carolina, Cliff Godwin's group, just find a way in, man. They're very dangerous. We're used to seeing them. My old pal Gavin Williams, now ace of the Cleveland Guardians staff, one of the top draft picks for Cliff Godwin the last handful of years. You're looking at a North Carolina team, though, built on pitching. They have two pitchers in the top 10 in Division I in ERA. Caden Glauber and Jason DeCaro are third and 10th, respectively. Gil, when I look for futures and I look for teams, if you give me two legit starters on a Friday and Saturday, that's usually enough to get you through. And if you've got two or three bullpen arms that can generate big time swing and miss, which is what North Carolina has, I think they're going to be okay. Listen, no favors done to them. It's still going to be difficult, but as long as their pitching is able to hold up, they don't hit a bunch of homers, but they have got enough run suppression on top to bottom of that pitching staff. But it is going to be a fight there at Chapel Thrill this weekend.
What about in College Station? I've heard some buzz on Southern Cal. They're plus 195. Obviously, the Aggies are minus 200. Any love from you for USC?
Okay, so I have a 50-1 future from earlier in the year on USC. Remember, they were out to an unbelievable start. What, 22-23-1? They were one of the hot shots at the beginning, along with UCLA. They've tailed off just a little bit, but if you're looking at a team that it could give the Aggies a little bit of run, they probably could. Here's the problem, Gil. If A&M's offense is what it's been for most of the year and they get right, this team can beat anybody offensively any given night. So I would still lean the Aggies to come out, but Southern Cal will provide some resistance.
Ducks and Gators in Eugene and Gainesville, or you see some challengers there, legit challengers?
Man, the two teams that hate each other, right? Oregon State, they both could be one seeds. So you get the rivalry there. And boy, I wish Dax Whitney were healthy, man. One of the top draft potential picks here upcoming. The arm injury sucks because not only the high 90 to triple digit fastball, but again, that rivalry of the old Pac-12 days between the Ducks and Oregon State. I'll tell you what, Oregon gave UCLA all they could handle in the Big 12 tournament, or the Big 10 tournament, I should say. I would say whoever wins this one between Oregon State is going to give Texas a real run for their money if it is indeed an Austin Super Regional.
All right. We should have had another segment for you to do the other eight regionals. Let me just ask you these two questions in close. How many SEC teams are we going to, out of the 16 Super Regionals, how many SEC teams do you think we'll see and who wins it all?
Okay, so I have a 45-1 ticket on Florida, and I think they're my pick right now. Aiden King, Liam Peterson, the way that rotation has been in the back end of their bullpen, they got a couple of guys that can run it up triple digits. Middle of that lineup now with Blake Sear, Kyle Jones at the top, Caden McDonald, they're going to be a handful. I love Gainesville and Kevin O'Sullivan to get there. They're my pick to win it this year.
Okay. Jensen, appreciate the backup. Buy the books Monday through Friday, along with Dave Ross. You're keeping Dave in check, by the way. You doing okay with him?
We're trying to, you know, it's a day in, day out process, my friend. Captain America takes no prisoners.
Day by day.
That's right.
This is the response.
Got Ludwig sweats this weekend.
At JLew50, by the way, for Jensen. J-L-E-W, spell out 50 for his Twitter. Thanks, Jensen. Appreciate it. Coming back on A Numbers Game. You're here because you want an edge. That's what separates listeners from winners. But let's be real, mindset alone doesn't get bets home. Pros win because they've got the tools, the data, and the discipline. And now so can you. Visa Pro gives you access to the same real-time insights the sharps use. No secrets, no fluff, just actionable info that moves markets. Tap the link and see why serious bettors are turning knowledge into profit with Visa Pro. Well, this has devolved into a little sports talk radio. Paul Sporer will join us now, courtesy of the Progressive Guest Line. At Sporer is where you can follow him on Twitter. Always appreciate his efforts to come on the show. Sleeper in the Bus is the name of the podcast. Paul joins us now from Austin, Texas, courtesy of the Progressive Guest Line. What's that? Oh, with an athletics hat on. How you doing, Paulie?
I'm well. How are you all?
We're great. Let's start.
Hang on.
Oh,
hang on.
Oh,
the answer is the microwave, Vinnie Johnson.
Vinnie Johnson.
Okay.
The microwave.
There we go.
Who did I used to call instant offense on this show? One of our guests, I used to say instant offense, the microwave.
John Legaza.
Yeah. That's he was.
Johnny, microwave. That's my boy right there. Yeah,
I was about to be embarrassed if I couldn't remember that.
Hey, Paul, have you caught John Legaza's podcast by any chance? Have you caught that act?
Absolutely.
Yeah, that is quite a.
Absolutely.
It's quite a treat, isn't it?
My friend. That's my friend right there.
That's my buddy as well.
He got my back.
I just want to flash up the May most wins update for those who have bet this market. We don't have the June market up yet, but Eric Biggio is on the job. He told us yesterday at Caesars William Hill. This has gotten very interesting because both the Rays and Guardians now have lost a couple in a row. And so it has given the Brewers and the Phillies the opportunity to knot it up at 16 wins, four-way tie now. Brewers are 16-6, Rays are 16-6. Philly 16-8, Guardians 16-9. Remember, William Hill Caesars, that would constitute a dead heat if it were to end now. This just in, it does not. But at Circa, fewest losses is the first tiebreaker, followed by run differential. So the Brewers right now just edging the Rays on a second tiebreaker. That's where this stands. Paul, I'll say this to you. Brewers, we love them. You and I have talked about them many times before. Yes. By the way, Braves and Dodgers lurking one win behind, it should be noted. And then the Diamondbacks and the Nationals, two back. Let's actually start with the Nationals. Is this sustainable for this team? This has been a great surprise in Major League Baseball.
It really has. You know, this was a team that I felt was kind of on the rise with some of the young things that they were doing. But I'm not even going to sit here and pretend that I saw this coming, because one of the key pieces, if you had told me that they were going to be a couple games over 500 playing really well, I'd have said there's no way Dylan Cruz isn't a huge part of that. So again, I'm not going to pretend like I saw it, because the way I saw them getting there was him as a central piece of that. For me, it reminds me a little bit of the Cardinals in a little bit of a different way. They're not one-to-one, just in the setup of, I believe in the offense with the Nats, and I believe in it with the Cardinals. I don't believe in either of their pitching staffs. And I'd go so far as to say that I'm not sure you could make a quality staff out of combining the two. Mm. You know, you got Cade Cavalli throwing some good games. I like him. He's an interesting upstart guy, but he would be the number one on this theoretical team. Again, bring both teams in. He's better than Liberatore. He's better than McGreevy. I know McGreevy's numbers have been good, folks. The regression candidate like crazy. In fact, it already started to come. So you got the soft tossers with St. Louis. I just don't trust the Nats pitching. I do believe in their hitting. I know you didn't want a full analysis on them, but they can hit. Be careful with that Nats offense.
I'm looking for a make miss on the playoffs. Would you ever bet them to make the playoffs, or way too early?
No.
Yeah.
It's just way too early because the Phillies are back, right? Like, and as far as the upstarts in that division, I think you kind of compare them to the Marlins. Now that would be a super team if you combine them. If you could get the Marlins pitching, even with Sandy not looking as good as I would like, but if you could combine their pitching with the Nats hitting, then you got a team. But I think they're almost the more appealing upstart for a playoff spot, but I just don't see either, because I'm too stupid to even fully rule out the Mets either. So it's just too difficult a division to constantly get wins there, that even if the Mets don't come all the way back, let's say they just play 500 the rest of the way, they'll get a lot of wins from the Nats. So I just don't see how they're getting there with this pitching.
Nats, by the way, if you're scoring at home, 13-1 to make the playoffs still at this early stage. It's not June yet, people. It's not June yet, but 13-1. If you have any interest in the Nats to make the playoffs,
You should be getting way better than that, though.
I just find this baseball, you should be getting way better than that.
I kind of like the Phillies. Right. Minus 140?
Minus 140. Yeah.
I like that.
I like that I way like better, personally.
All right.
Have you and I talked about this? I'm fascinated by this in the NL because I'm not a Guardians guy. The Guardians now have lost a couple in a row to the Nats. I have the season win total under on them, so I'm not convinced they're going to be a 500 team. You have two divisions in the American League, Paul, the Central and the West. The West right now, nobody's 500. The Central, only one team is 500, and I've said this before again, 1994. One of the things we missed out was the Texas Rangers were 10 games below 500 in the West, and the season
ended. It would have been so fun.
Is there any rhyme or reason to this happening that two entire divisions minus X, the Guardians right now, are struggling in this manner? Or is this just randomness in your opinion?
I think it is a lot of randomness here. I mean, and the real key that you look at out West is every team sucks at home there. And that's where everyone's supposed to get right. At least the Central teams are playing to what you expect, which is quality at home and struggle on the road. And they got some really bad road records there with my Tigers and the Royals, not even having 10 wins on the road. Neither of those teams, they're 7-17 and 8-21 respectively. But you go looking up and down the West and none of them win at home. 10-14, 14-15, 12-11. Okay, that's an over 500, sorry. 12-14, 12-16. But you get my point there. So that it is, and that's anomalous. I just don't think that's going to last all year where the West has nobody or one team, Texas, who is one game over 500 and then the rest being under 500. I think it is an interesting division that could beat itself up a bunch though. The Astros I thought were better, but then they lost a bunch of their pitching. Remember I was calling them the horror movie villain. I think maybe they are, toward the end of the Halloween franchise there, because I'm just not sure how they can recover from the health that they've hit. But yeah, are the Athletics good enough to go way over 500? I don't know. I'm wearing their hat. I like the team. They're fun, but I don't like their pitching either. And then the Mariners, do they have enough hitting? You got these teams that are half good, and that's why they're winning half their games, I guess. That was a stupid. No, that's not why they're winning half their games, but you get what I'm saying.
I do. I know what you meant. Let me ask you this question, because we've thrown this around all week. We did a whole blind resume thing on it the other day, but you haven't had a chance to chime in on this. It's the NL Cy Young market, which is maybe, and I know we're not in June yet, but at this point in a season, maybe the greatest thing I've ever seen in any awards market ever. You have seven dudes, the seventh being Paul Skeens with a 3.00 ERA.
I know.
Six other guys are sub two, one of which is sub one. Sanchez, Mizorowski, Skeens, Sale, Otani, Burns, Kyle Harrison, and Zach Wheeler. Are the others that I'm talking about. By the way, Yamamoto, who I didn't even mention, he's thrown in there as well. And then there's Mason Miller, the reliever of all time, right? Like, yeah. Mason Miller's sitting there 50 to, well, I should say, of all time. But
you just explained why he can't win it.
That's right.
Right?
That's
because of all those other starters.
That's exactly
the only
right.
way I can create an avenue for a reliever. I'm very anti-reliever for the Cy Young. You have to have a bad starter class, and you couldn't find the more opposite case than that. For Miller here.
100% agree, and I have a Miller ticket. By the way, Michael King deserves a shout-out, who's 70-1 yeah. in there as well. If you had a vote today, who is your NL Cy Young winner?
It is Sanchez for me. I would labor. I think I'd probably go back and forth between Sanchez and Mizorowski. And in this case, again, we're dealing with the small samples that we have in front of us, but the 72-64 innings would be would be a big part of that there that would kind of push me towards Sanchez. Since we are going off these small samples here, you got to make small little moves. But Mizorowski has just been so amazing. I had some concerns about the wildness that he showed last year down the stretch a little bit. And I was like, are we going to get kind of the poor end of Mizorowski's command? Nope. We're not. We're kind of getting the high end of it right now, and he's unbelievable. But I'm going to go Sanchez. I think he, if we ended the season today for some reason, which would obviously ruin my life, but I think he would get it. Otani's right there, but 49-72 innings, right? And I know the 0.73 ERA is amazing. I think he would probably win it if they were voting today. I think Otani would win it. My pick would be Sanchez, though. 22 extra innings is the sealer for me there. Volume matters.
Paul, I hate to leave with this. Tigers' worst record in the month of May. And just drop.
They're so bad. It's unbelievable. The bullpen was always terrible. This was always coming, maybe not this severely, but even in April when things were going all right, I knew the bullpen was terrible.
5-18 with a minus 38 run differential in the month of May. Paul, thank you, sir. As always.
Take care, y'all.
Paul Spohr, everybody. Jonathan Davis is going to join us here for hockey. We were just chatting before. He made an interesting, we were talking Golden Knights, but then he asked an interesting question. He goes, did Wemby get any backlash for not doing the on-court interview after the game yesterday? I didn't even realize he didn't.
Yeah, he blew it off.
Yeah. But you know, I'm so glad he brought that up because it triggers for me something that I've been wanting to say on the show, which is Wembanyama, great dude. I love his post-game press conferences when they're in the back and it's the whole press and they're asking him questions. He's up on the podium. He pauses and then he answers very deliberately, very thoughtfully. But the on-court part right after the game, he seems to hate those.
Yeah.
Whatever question comes, he's like one sentence out. So it doesn't surprise me that he missed it.
I think there was some backlash. I think there should be more because it's – I think Victor Wembanyama, this is kind of what happens when you do something so well. But it's he's been so great and I think has so clearly taken so much pride in being great, trying to get to that next level as quickly as humanly possible, right? And kind of accepting all the responsibilities that he knows comes with being a great player. So to see him kind of blow off something like that, it's part of the gig.
It is.
You got to stand up there and answer questions.
Part of the gig. Not why we wanted to talk to Jonathan, but he brought that up, so I want to give him a shout. Jonathan Davis joins us now to talk hockey with us, courtesy of the Progressive Guest Line. Always a pleasure to have Jonathan on. We bumped Willie's second segment so we could talk hockey, for God's sakes. You can follow.
Well, rightfully so. He's a bum.
Rightfully so, he says. West Coast Hockey at HL, HKY on the hockey is where you can find Jonathan on Twitter. Before we talk about the Hurricanes and the Canadiens tonight, because obviously it's game four in that Eastern Conference best of seven final tonight. We'll get to you have a bunch of plays in that. Let's just talk Vegas Golden Knights because this is a glorious day. And I want to start by giving you a shout. When I asked you, when you were on the show a few weeks ago, I want to say maybe a couple weeks ago, and I asked you, hey, what would you make a hypothetical if it ends up being the Golden Knights and the Avalanche? Because the matchup hadn't been set yet. What would the series price be? And you said Avalanche minus 160. And I thought to myself, wow, that seems way low. Well, the joke's on me because they sweep the Avalanche plus 2850 for those who had that ticket. That cashes. And I guess my first question to you is this team right now, not talking about the Vegas Golden Knights of the regular season, but this team under John Tortorella, the way they're playing right now, is this team better than the 2023 Stanley Cup champs, in your opinion?
I don't know if they're necessarily better than they were. I mean, that team had everything going. They were four lines deep. They played a different style of hockey. But this team under John Tortorella, you know, it's a much different team. And Tortorella's talked about it. William Karlsson coming back from injury changes everything for the Golden Knights. He lengthens this lineup. They become so deep at the center position, and it just slots everybody better. And then the other thing, guys, is, look, they don't win that game when they were down 3-0 in game three under Bruce Cassidy. Yeah. They would have folded their tents because Bruce would have just berated them on the bench. And Tortorella's just talked about how he kind of just sits back and, you know, he just kind of keeps them, you know, in check, but he doesn't overcoach. And it's been remarkable what this team has done under Tortorella. Just, what, five losses since he took over with, what, eight games left in the regular season?
I will even correct you. 18-4 and, well, I guess, yeah, the one is, I guess, technically lost, right? But 18-4-1 is, I guess, the official record.
Right.
Let me, and I'm a much more casual hockey fan than you are, but the thing that was amazing to me about last night's game is Golden Knights were up 1-0. Obviously, they got the one to put them up 2 late, but it was remarkable how few chances the Avalanche could even muster. I mean, the Golden Knights were just playing so well, and that's what sort of elicits the question that I asked you. I was like, wow, I don't know who beats this team. If it's the Hurricanes and the Golden Knights, I'll put you on the spot again, Jonathan. What's that series price? Assuming, by the way, that's a big assumption because Hurricanes got to win two more games still against the Canadiens. What would that series price be?
Well, I saw some book put out. I think Carolina would be minus 120. Minus 115 over favorite over Vegas. And I think part of the problem, and you know, Colorado had, you know, their best forward Nathan MacKinnon was compromised for, you know, the last game and a half. Their best defenseman Cale Makar, you know, was dealing with a bad shoulder. You could see that he could not take a slap shot in this series. And then they were missing, you know, so you're missing your best forward, your best defenseman, but that's not to take anything away from Vegas, who, I mean, they were so detailed in their game.
So detailed in their game. That's for sure. Well, congratulations to you as a Golden Knights fan, and we'll see if the Golden Knights can, they're headed to their third Stanley Cup final in 9 seasons in franchise history. We will see if they can win their second, regardless of who the opponent might be, Hurricanes or Canadiens. And so to the Eastern Conference final we go, where it is 2-1 Hurricanes. Hurricanes 10-1 in this postseason. Again, I mentioned earlier this week, the record for a 16-win format record coast-to-coast is 16-2 by the Edmonton Oilers of 1988. So the Hurricanes sort of, not quite yet, but kind of flirting with that pace. Hurricanes are -143 favorite tonight at the Bell Center in Montreal. How do you see this game?
Well, I mean, I guess we should be betting 3-2 both teams, because that's been the common theme in the last couple of games between the two. But for me, this is, I like to say, if it's not broke, don't fix it. So it's a lot of instant gratification for me. You know, the Montreal Canadiens have scored a first period goal in 15 of the 17 playoff games. Why buck the trend? I'll go with Canadiens to score a first period goal. Carolina has scored the first goal of the game in 9 of 11 of their last 11 games. So Carolina to score first. I'll play both teams to score in the first period. That's happened in 8 of the last 10 Canadiens games. So for me, it's all about the first period. It's in my write-up at VSiN.com. But that for me is the way to go. It's the way I went in game 3, and I'll continue it in game number 4.
And we have some other bets here, right? You have first 5 minutes, first period, first 10 minutes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, goal in the first 5, Gil, has cashed in 8 of the last 10 Montreal games, 4 straight Carolina games. Goal first 10 is on a 10-0 run for the Canadiens and 5 of 6 for Carolina.
Wow. Okay. You also have a prop bet here as well?
Yeah, the one prop bet, Lane Hutson for the Montreal Canadiens, for 2 block shots. And then I think, I parlayed that. I believe, I'm trying to remember now. Help me out here if you've got that. I know I've got Hutson over for 3 block shots at like -105. I've been trying to find his defensive partner, Mike Matheson, for 2 block shots to put that in a parlay. But for whatever reason, the books are not offering Matheson anywhere, which is kind of interesting to me because he's not injured.
The Dylan Harper treatment, as we call it in the basketball world. With props.
Yeah, for real.
Just being out there.
So parlay those, Jonathan, if people can find it, is what you're saying.
Yeah, if you can find Matheson for 2 blocks, I would parlay that with Hutson for 2 at a good price. It's just that for some reason, Matheson, I've checked a couple of books, and, you know, that one's come up on the day of the game. It wasn't up the night before in game 3. They had about 5 other players up for their block shots. And then it came out the day of game 3. For some reason, the day of game 4, Matheson's still not available. But if it becomes available, I would put him in a parlay for 2.
All right. First period, both teams to score, +196. First period, over 1.5 goals, -105. Carolina to score the first goal, first period, +115. Canadiens to score first period goal, -128. Goal scored first 5 minutes of the first period, +192. First 10 minutes, -136. And then the 3-plus block shots prop there at the bottom.
Again. Now, the other one, guys, one more. If Carolina does score first, I would play live in-game Montreal to score the next goal.
Okay, let's add that one to it as well. Just again, naked eye watching hockey. Hurricanes, even, I know these games have been as close as possible on the scoreboard. Hurricanes feel like they're so much better than the Canadiens to me. Is that a correct sort of general analysis from you?
Well, I mean, look, they've dominated the shots on goal numbers, and they've also dominated, you know, the shot attempt numbers. But, you know, Carolina tends to shoot from everywhere. They've done a good job of you know, preventing Montreal from getting shots. Canadiens coach Martin St. Louis talked about changing some things up tonight. He says sometimes you may have to give up the puck to get the puck back. And if you remember the first goal in the Golden Knights game, it was a flip pass by Braden McNabb to Mark Stone. Then set him in on a breakaway. Look for the Canadiens to do something like that. And I don't know, here's one thing for the Canadiens. Their goalie, Jakub Dobish, happy 25th birthday to him today. Maybe the Canadiens get the birthday boost, because Dobish, I'm telling you guys, there's money on the board tonight that he's put up for a Canadiens victory.
The birthday angle. Thank you, Jonathan. Appreciate it. Congrats on the Knights. Nick Whalen, who is, of course, the co-host of the show that follows us here on the network, Prop Points, which he does with Jeff Erickson every day. Nick Whalen joins us now, courtesy of the Progressive Guest Line. Look at you, Nick. 19-15 coming up from the rear. Look at you. Well done.
Look, we ran into some adversity, Gil, at the end of the first round, some adversity in the second round. But yeah, we were on a nice run, at least before last night. I believe I had hit 8 in a row in the contest. Damn. And then was all over the under in Spurs Thunder. I thought, okay, we got, you know, two of the really three top scoring options at this point out for OKC. De'Aaron Fox is hobbled. How are we going to get points in this game? And like 3 minutes into the second quarter, that was completely down the drain. We saw really a pretty big reversal from all the struggles that we saw from OKC in game four. Isaiah Hartenstein was great. I would stop short of saying Chet Holmgren was great, but this was pretty easily his best game of the series last night. And it says a lot that 16-11 goes down as a huge success for Chet Holmgren. We're kind of in Jalen Duren mode with him right now, but obviously Jared McCain, Alex Caruso came through for OKC. So still in it, but I believe we only get, is it three picks during the NBA finals? Yes. So it's getting late.
Yeah, it's getting late early, as Yogi Berra once said. But you still have a shot at second place there for the $500 prize. So what about game six tomorrow night? Are we going to get a game seven, I guess, is the first question. Spurs favored by 3.5. Do you have a play on the spread or the total of 218.5? And what prop bets do you have? Let's just start with, do the Spurs win this, in your opinion?
I think they do, and I am holding a Thunder in six ticket, so maybe there's a little bit of mental hedging going on, but this has been such a back-and-forth series. It's been kind of a back-and-forth playoffs even for the Spurs in some ways, where, you know, in each of these rounds, even going back to the Portland series, like, things have gotten a little bit dicey, and just when you're ready to start wondering, like, you know, does this team maybe not have it, they usually answer back, and I would be pretty surprised if we see, you know, another quiet outing from Victor Wembanyama, who did get to 20 points last night, but that was largely because he got to the line 12 times and made all 12 of those free throws. I thought the Spurs played about as badly as they could as a team outside of Champagne, you know, who kept them in it in the first quarter. I thought Castle was fine. Only three turnovers for him. That goes down as a win, but Fox didn't really look like himself. So I will take the Spurs with the 3.5 for game six. And look, it's going to be super popular. It's going to be chalky. Wembanyama over 27.5 points. He is quietly averaging over this number for the series. You know, it's been pretty much feast or famine game to game, but I think we get a locked in, aggressive, backs against the wall version of Victor Wembanyama, kind of a take matters into my own hands situation for him tomorrow night. And then I will play the over 6.5 assist guys for Stephon Castle, who's gotten to at least six in every game in this series. He's averaging over 7.5 for the conference finals. And if you do a little digging over on NBA.com/stats, 16.4 potential assists per game in this series for Castle. The advanced numbers would say if the Spurs were converting these at the rate that you would expect, he should be averaging just a shade under 10 assists per game for the series.
Who should the Knicks want to play, in your opinion, Nick?
Great question. I think it's still the Spurs. I think it's still the Spurs. You know, there's still the experience factor. I mean, the Wembanyama piece is just, you know, nobody has anybody that you feel good about throwing at Wembanyama defensively, but at least you have the two bigs. You know, you don't want to play Mitchell Robinson maybe more than 15 to 18 minutes because of what you lose offensively and what you lose in terms of playmaking with what Cat's given them. But you have the bodies, at least in theory, to throw at him. But really, I think both of these teams, OKC and San Antonio, the guards specifically, presents some big time issues for the New York Knicks. Like, if you could draw up, you know, the two teams that could give Jalen Brunson trouble, the type of defenders that each team could throw at him, it's Dylan Harper, it's Stephon Castle, it's Alex Caruso, it's Cason Wallace, it's even SGA, who might spend some time on him in that series. And of course, the big wrinkle is, you know, what version of the Thunder would you be getting? If you're getting OKC without AJ Mitchell and without Jalen Williams,
right,
maybe that is the more appealing matchup. But if you're assuming that at least one, if not both of those guys play in the NBA finals, I think you still want the Spurs if you're New York.
All right. Let's talk a little football. We have a few minutes here. We haven't really talked football with you. I know it's May, but I'm curious. You're a Jags guy. Give me the way too early. The Jags have nothing to do with this question. I just wanted to point out to people, he's a big Jags fan. Things looking up for the franchise.
Well, I might be betting the Jags in the division this year.
Well, I mean, we could start with there. I was going to ask it more broadly. We could start with that, but I was going to ask it more broadly. What's the most, based on market, based on what you've anecdotally taken in, what's the most outlying Nick Whalen opinion right now that doesn't appear to be a consensus opinion in the NFL?
Look, this might be a little more fantasy than it is betting, but I think it is reflected in the betting markets as well. This team is 5-1, pretty distant fourth to win its division. But I'm back in on the Minnesota Vikings. I'm back in on Justin Jefferson. I'm back in on Jordan Mason, Jordan Addison, pretty much every piece of that offense. I am a Kyler Murray defender, and somebody's probably going to clip this and play it back in, you know, mid-October when the Vikings have like two wins and this looks really dumb. But I just don't think we realized, you know, how dire the quarterback situation was for pretty much the entirety of last season and what it did to the offense, what it did to just how they had to operate game to game. If you look at where Kyler Murray is going in drafts, you're getting a crazy discount. He's like the QB 21, QB 22 right now. Like even 2 years ago when it felt like he wasn't playing well in Arizona, he was still a top 10 fantasy quarterback. I think Kyler Murray, whatever your opinion is of him, is going to be a massive, massive upgrade for Minnesota, which, you know, sneakily usurped the Lions for third place in that division by the end of the season. So I still think the Minnesota Vikings have a pretty high floor. I would not be surprised, you know, given the kind of fallback potential for the Bears, what's going on with the Green Bay Packers right now, Josh Jacobs situation, that's not great. I think Minnesota could be a lot more competitive than the numbers would imply.
A lot more competitive than the numbers imply does not, just stops a little short of saying bet on them for the division, or are we doing that?
I think Detroit with the schedule, and I'm pretty in on this Lions team. I think they make the most sense, and you can still get Detroit at like plus 185 at DraftKings, which I don't think is bad, but 5-1 for Minnesota for a team that, again, is extremely well coached. Even when they had bad quarterback play, still had a pretty nice baseline. They have maybe the best defensive coordinator in football. If you're asking me like which fourth place team in the division by the odds would you bet to win the division, it would definitely be Minnesota.
Hey, which fourth place team in the division? No, I'm kidding. That would be it.
The Minnesota Vikings.
5-1 on the Minnesota Vikings. Okay, what about your Jags? You got them for the division in the AFC South?
I still think the Texans defense is going to be really transferable. You know, they made some improvements on the offensive line. Of course, the big question in Houston is CJ Stroud. I would pick Houston to win the division. I don't like how the schedule stacks up for the Jags. You know, after playing the Browns in week one, their next seven games are incredibly difficult. A lot of those are on the road. Two of them are in London. So they're going to have to find ways to win games that they're not going to be favored in early in the year. I don't necessarily like the attrition that they had defensively, specifically with Devin Lloyd, who turned into like a borderline all pro for them last year. I think we kind of meet in the middle as far as the first and second half of last season version of the Jaguars. Second best team in the division for me. I would still bet Houston.
All right. You can follow Nick on Twitter at Whalen. Just replace the L with the number one. We're still working on that. We're workshopping what it could change to.
Matt Brown's working on it.
We look forward to prop points at the top of the hour. Thanks, Nick. Appreciate it.
All right. Thank you, guys.
Nick Whalen, everybody. Coming back, we'll recap the bets next.